806 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. It's that simple. You've got junk, and my friend Trey gets rid of it. I mean, I know there's a lot more complexities there, but I mean, let's just, you've got the junk, he makes it go away. Now, that could be at your house, could be outside your house, could be a storage unit, a house you're getting ready to sell, a business, a shop you need cleaned out, wherever you got that junk, and you don't know what to do with it, well, you get 1-800-GOT-JUNK to come, and they'll actually make, it's a refreshing thing, a day and a time for the appointment, not some spectrum of time. It's actual day and time. They come, they quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. Check out Trey and the local crew from 1-800-GOT-JUNK, Mobile and Baldwin Counties, by calling 1-800-GOT-JUNK or going online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio on this Thursday. Welcome back.
Good morning, Sean. Good morning, Dalton. How you guys doing today?
It's, I think I'm good. It's this, this week has taken a month, but I'm here.
So we saw the shots of your fishing expedition this weekend. Red snapper.
Big red snapper.
Nice.
Are you going with me?
Eventually.
Okay.
Eventually. We'll have to do that.
Okay, we go fishing. You live the coastal lifestyle. We're just going to get you in the, going with me out there.
Home sweet home, right?
Yep, absolutely. All right, a lot to talk about this morning, and you've given me a list of items here. I'm like, holy cow, I got to get
a
into
A lot
this.
Happened over the past
That's what I'm saying.
Month,
this right? week has been like a month already. You want to go with the a couple things here. Like, we were talking about this last hour, and talked about it yesterday, too, with Quaker Foods rebranding Aunt Jemima, and then that starts the conversation for Uncle Ben's,
Mrs. Butterworth,
which, I said before, and I know I may be weird, but I never thought about the race of Mrs. Butterworth. Aunt Jemima is one thing, and it surprises me it's now that this is being done, not before. But Mrs. Butterworth, I was like, I never paid attention to that.
Well, first of all, we got to go back and talk about the definitions, right? So typically when you and I talk on air, we talk about a distinction between something being racial and something being racist.
Right.
And we also talk about the distinction between racist performing a distinct act and racism being more of an overall system.
Okay.
And so when you talk about something like the history of aunt or uncle at the time and how that was used as a term primarily among young white to refer to older black servant type people, right? It simply reinforces the system. And so the whole name of Aunt Jemima coming out of the minstrel shows of the past, it's anchored in racism from the past. And so when we have the conversations like we're having now, what I often tell people you have to think about is it's simply a component of the system. And just your reaction actually reinforces that whole notion. It's so innocuous, you don't even kind of notice it in the way that you would if somebody was saying the N-word.
Oh, sure. But I mean, between the two, the Aunt Jemima thing, I saw that. Mm-hmm. The Mrs. Butterworth, the two, I guess I didn't,
So I'm going to go
pay as much attention.
On a complete tangent here for just a second.
Okay.
The Washington Redskins.
Yeah. What about them?
What does that cause you to react any way?
Well, because it's been a subject of discussion for a long time.
Right.
Is why, yeah.
And so regardless of how you feel about it, it goes back to the concept that a group of Americans, because we're all Americans, may look at something and feel about it in a way that's different today. And it may be more vocal and visible about it today than it was yesterday. And so if a private company looks at something like that and is responding to their audience and making the decision, well, that's perfectly appropriate, right? But the larger thing is it's society continuing to move forward. So it's not that you should necessarily feel some kind of way about it one way or another, but who's going to be the person defending it and saying it should stay exactly how it is now?
And that's what I'm saying. I think there's a difference between private or publicly traded companies making these decisions. I was surprised weren't made decades ago.
Okay.
And asking, you know, to rename something that's a governmental or removing monuments and statues. Mm-hmm. Those arguments seem to be framed concurrently, and I see them very different from a private company that has customers that needs to react to it, to a system where I think there should be votes and measures put into place to decide what the people want to do. They're different. They're different things.
But this is where you and I always differ in this conversation.
Fine.
I'm saying it's all the same thing.
I don't think so.
Let's say, well, of course you don't. It would not be good radio if you thought that it was, right? So let's talk about the Confederacy for just a second. So NASCAR bans the display of the Confederate flag.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been interesting to see a lot of blowback from, you know, from my friends who are folks who would, you know, maybe wear the Confederate flag on a belt buckle or have it on their truck or something like mm-hmm. that, right? And it kind of strikes me that really at the end of the day, we're talking about a time frame from 1861 to 1865 and the Confederate battle flag and the association with some among us that ties that to their Southern identity. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not good, not bad, just kind of establishes the landscape. So if that's the case for one set of people in our society, wouldn't it naturally flow that another element of people in our society may be looking at that and feeling about it differently? And so if that's the case, the issue, as you mentioned, as it pertains to Confederate monuments and things that you're doing in this public sector, is why should I look at something with affection that may be inherently offensive to me just because you've chosen to tie that to your Southern identity? And so it's each one of these thousand little things that all comes into this system that creates this kind of undercurrent of racism that permeates through our society.
Okay.
And so if you're going to address one component, at the end of the day, you ultimately should address all components.
You can address things, but it seems like we're in a time now that addressing them doesn't mean they're going to be debated or questioned. Addressing them means they're going to be pointed out and eliminated. You see what I'm saying? That in a situation where, and I see very different from the private sector to the public sector, because NASCAR made their choice, you know, mm-hmm. to eliminate the battle flag. And they're getting blowback on it, but they obviously thought that was the right decision for them to do.
But here's the thing that's interesting is you're suggesting that in this situation, the private sector leads. I'm suggesting in this situation the public sector leads.
Why should it? I mean, the people have a method through the public sector to lead. They could have voted people in and made those changes, right?
Right up until the fact that the state of Alabama put a law in place protecting the monument.
Which is funny to see it.
Prevented the municipalities from being able to do anything different.
I know. And you see how quickly that's been got around. That law, whether they did it on purpose and made it have no significant teeth or it was just so hastily done by the legislature, it has had, I mean, when I had Attorney General on, I said, so it's basically just a fine. It's not a, he said, yes. He said, it's a $25,000 one-time fine. It seems like a money grab by Montgomery to me.
But. Well, Sean, we're among friends here. You know why we did that, right?
Of course I did.
The governor campaigned on it. Because of this association between the monument and the definition of it somehow being part of identity, right? So if, for example, we talked about the law going in place and municipalities had been given the leeway, if you will, to decide to continue to have a monument or not have a monument without the fine, you and I wouldn't have a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. The community themselves would side. But they specifically said that communities like Birmingham, like Montgomery, like Mobile could not make that decision on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially took that authority away from them. Now, let it be the federal government coming in and telling the state of Alabama to do something, and then everybody's reacting differently.
This is exactly what I've said for a decade.
So I go back to the time frame. We're talking about a time frame from 1861 to 1865. And the requirement that 100 plus years later, someone thinks that someone should continue to honor that time frame. And that's the part about it that I think is problematic from a governmental perspective.
All right, coming right back, more of Robert Kennedy Jr. right here on Mobile Mornings. All right, 820 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Sean Dalton, Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio, and continue our discussion. I want to grab some text here. Supermom says she's been waiting on your take on the topic, so it was good. She was wanting to hear that. Dale says, a question for Robert, are there any African-American racist or are only white folks racist?
Okay, so we got to go back to the technical definition. So the technical
Because I don't like that term racist. I'd say bigotry is a lot more prevalent than racism. But.
So racism by definition requires two components. You have to have prejudice and you have to have power. So you'll often hear folks sitting in my chair that'll say a black person can't be racist unless they're in a situation where they just have power, right? So you'll often hear talk about black people can be prejudiced towards white people, but you won't normally hear them say that black people can be racist, just because historically you don't have organizations at the societal level where black folks have historically been in power. Is
okay.
that so? You following that?
So if somebody is, because I mean, my definition, the dictionary says is, and that's why I've always said people throw around racism, they probably mean bigotry. But if somebody has to have power, so if somebody is not powerful, elected, or you know whatever position, they're not racist, they're bigots. Or prejudice.
Prejudice. That would be the definition, right?
All right. So you believe that, so to change it, if he would have said, are there any African-American prejudiced people or only white folks prejudiced?
No, absolutely. Right. Prejudice exists in every color.
All right. We're going to talk about the latest news yesterday with the charge of murder for the police officer in Georgia. And I haven't seen, I know, I think there was a arrest of the other officer too or something that, I don't know what else, but the main thing is the murder charge. Do you, from what you've seen now, do you think that that's a valid charge?
Is it a valid charge? I believe that it is. Do I think the officer will be found guilty of the highest charge of felony murder? That's hard. That is really hard to determine at this point in time.
You know, it's because looking at this, there's a short video, there's a medium length video, there's a longer video that I guess that comes from a security cam on the Wendy's or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I wish more people would just watch the whole one, right? You watch this. It's a question of was the motivation, at least I'm going to guess, and you correct, was the motivation of that officer to shoot Rayshard Brooks, was that motivation because of his skin color or was it because of him turning around with the taser in his hand? I mean, that's trying to figure out what, you know.
Sure. So let's frame this one here as well. So really, I think what the larger issue that we're evaluating right now is the concept of the benefit of the doubt. Okay. Who gets the benefit of the doubt? So we talked about some of the cases that we know here locally. E.J. Bradford in Birmingham, for example, he was the one who, there was a shooting in the mall. He drew his weapon. The police officer thought that he was the person who shot and shot him, right? So in that situation, ultimately, the police officer got the benefit of the doubt, right? So in this situation, all of us are looking at video. We're all seeing the same thing. And then individually, we're having to ask ourselves, are we willing to give the officer the benefit of the doubt in that situation? Because as you mentioned, as he was running away, he reached back with his right arm and he fired a taser. That's clear on the video, right?
Because when I first heard the story, before I saw the video, they said that Brooks had been shot in the back. And I said, well, shot in the back, the person's running away. But then the video comes out about
that. So in the Walter Scott, South Carolina situation, he was the one who got out of the car as a traffic stop, was running away, and then he was shot in the back. The police report said one thing, but when you saw that video, it was clear, right? So that's part of the framing I wanted to do. So if he did not have a taser and he was running away and he had been shot in the back, there's no question. Anyone would have a question that is a change of murder. Okay. Conversely, if he had had a firearm, if he had taken the police officer's service revolver and was firing that behind his back, on the other end of the spectrum, there's no question whatsoever. So now you have the situation where what he had was a taser. The taser had been fired at least once, maybe twice already. And at the point of impact of the first shot, he was 18 feet away. So now the question becomes, do you give that officer the benefit of the doubt or not? And I'm saying, when you asked me the question about whether or not I thought filing the charge was appropriate, I actually think it was because of those reasons. He was 18 feet away. He was firing a taser. Yes, it was behind him, but it wasn't like he was aimed. It wasn't like he had turned completely around and charged the officer, in which case it would have been completely justified. But whether or not there would be a conviction on that particular charge with the evidence that we're looking at, that's hard. That's hard to tell.
So you've got a, I mean, you've got a situation where the chief there in Atlanta, you know, steps down mm-hmm. over this and all that. And you hear the, now they're going back and forth today, whether there's a blue flu going on mm-hmm. there in Atlanta right. with law enforcement not showing up. But if law enforcement feels like, okay, I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had a challenge here to get the best and brightest into law enforcement.
You know, we started this conversation last week. The recruiting and retention of quality officers is something that all of us should be concerned about. And as we start to change the terminology from something like defund the police to reform the police, then part of that conversation needs to focus on how we as a society can do a better job of supporting people who decide to engage in that profession. Now, there's one thing that, I'm sorry, there are two things that I want to highlight here before the half hour ends. The first thing is, we're talking about it from the perspective of the officer and the concept of the blue flu. And we understand people may make that decision that on this particular day, at this particular time, for this particular reason, I'm just not going to clock in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that, even if I don't necessarily agree with it. I can understand that. But the concept of some of the reporting, which says, I'm there, I'm on duty, I'm getting a call, and I'm not responding to the call, that's a whole different ballgame. And so I put that in the same space that folks say, hey, you can protest and be loud, even obnoxious in that protest, but once you cross the line into looting and rioting, you're into behavior that's unacceptable. So, yes, I understand the concept of what it is, the amount of pressure that we're putting police officers under, but if you're on the clock, you're on the clock. And mm-hmm. it's your obligation to protect and serve.
There you go. Before we run out of time here, D.C. statehood. Talked about it yesterday with Jeff.
Yes, yes. Sean, I was cracking up as I was listening to you go back and forth with the former attorney general, current Senate candidate on that topic. And here's what the quote that I wrote down. You said that if you live in D.C., and you want to be able to vote or have your vote counted or represented, then you could just move to Maryland
or Virginia.
Right? I remember very distinctly us having a conversation about annexation in Mobile.
Right.
And I talked about how a lot of people who live in West Mobile, outside the city limits, are people who move there uh-huh. from inside the city limits. And so if they want the police services, the fire services, and other municipality services that are provided in the city of Mobile, all they have to do is move in.
Right.
There's plenty of housing here. So are you consistent in that view, or has your view about Mobile annexation changed within the last 24
hours? Well, the petitioning process in both, it's fine to petition, but I know that the idea of the founders was, let's not have a state have the national capital in it, right? To not mm-hmm. give one state this bigger...
But that's not the call. The call is not for one state to have it. The state would be D.C.
Right.
Right? And then, I guess the federal areas would still be designated as, it would be a smaller DC.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, that they were talking about the footprint. But why wouldn't you say, okay, here's the push. We're going to make this part of DC goes to Virginia, this part goes to Maryland.
I mean, that's an option.
You'd still get representation then? You'd be part.
Right, because what the issue is with DC statehood isn't about DC statehood, it's about two additional senators. And the belief that those senators would be left of center as opposed to right of center, and it's a shift in balance of power.
You talk about
the
same a small state, it'd make Rhode Island happy. I guess they wouldn't be the smallest state, but I mean, you talk about a tiny state to
you
have.
You can talk about the same thing with Puerto Rico, too, though, right?
Yeah, but
which
they're
would
not,
be
but
a
they
larger state.
Yeah, but they still don't. Yeah, I don't know that, you know, Puerto Rico's situation is what they are they're beyond a territory. They're a
protectorate.
Protectorate, okay. Mm-hmm. No. So. Puerto Rico is one thing, but do you think that there's a need for the state of D.C. versus, if you want to say, it's a fair argument. If you say, hey, y'all want representation, fine. Annex into, you get a vote, you can annex into Virginia or Maryland or whatever makes, you know.
So I think there is the need for
the
folks
consistent.
Who are there. Yeah, from a consistency standpoint. And the options are, option one, make it its own state. Option two, annex into the other two states. I think either one of those is better than the situation that we have currently.
I think if I will always side with the people who want representation.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the mechanism, though, probably would be to go into a adjoining state. But all right, before we run out of time, we're 1 minute here. Alabama voting requirements.
Yes, yes. You guys were talking about this a little bit as well. Where I come down on it is, philosophically, I think anything that makes it easier to vote is better, right? And so if you look at some of the things that happen in Florida with early voting, having precincts open and people being able to spread that out over time, I definitely think that's a good thing. So anything that we can do in the state.
So this curbside thing, the curbside voting?
Well, you need to distinguish, are you capable of executing that in 3 weeks from whether or not you think that it's a good
idea?
There's
a pragmatic and an idealistic argument.
Right.
On the pragmatic one, I don't see how we do this without goofing it up.
There may be some challenges in terms of executing it that quickly, right? Yeah. I would be the first to concede that. But the idea, the concept of being able to do it is something that I definitely think is worth exploring.
All right. So we will pick that conversation back up in the future.
We will indeed.
All right. Good to see you, man.
All right. You guys have a good week.
Will do. Robert Kennedy Jr., our guest. We're coming right back. Rob Hulbert from Landyap joins us. And he got a couple things on his list to talk about. One of them, a conversation I had earlier in the week with former governor of the state, Don Siegelman. Rob wants to talk about that as well when we come back.
All right, 8:35 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's head over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Hey, doing great, and even better when I go to McConnellAutomotive.com and look at your awesome inventory that you have on the lot. Tell us what you got going on at McConnell.
That's right. We just got 2 truckloads of cars we bought down in South Florida. They just got here yesterday and this morning. We're getting them ready for putting it on the lot, getting them all certified, which is certified, it means it gives you an extra 12-12 on the factory warranty that's GM certified. Plus, it bumps up the powertrain up to 100,000 miles. Great interest rates on them. I mean, y'all just come check them out or check them out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. Don't forget, we'll still buy your car, even though I'm buying everywhere. We'll buy yours, so bring it by here. We'll give you top dollar for it. Don't forget, we got 0% on the new car side, on 72 months on the SUVs we got. So come check us out in the heart of Midtown on Dolphin Street.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, Louie.
Thank you.
That's Louis Arata. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right, 8:36, and y'all say good morning to Rob Hulbert with Landyap, LandyapMobile.com. Hey, man.
Good morning.
Morning. Which one to start off with here? Let's see. You want to talk about the former governor of the state of Alabama and his new book, or would you like to talk about the confusing matter of President Trump's visit to Mobile or not visit to Mobile?
I don't know which one is more confusing.
Start with President Trump.
We can start talking about President Trump's visit.
Help me here, because, okay, here, let me go through my timeline, then you can compare and contrast. So last week, I was given a heads up that President Trump would be coming to Mobile on July 11th for a campaign event for Tommy Tuberville. Okay, so I've said, okay, I'll sit on this and wait for some more confirmation information, be ready to do something. All right, then it comes out, starts leaking over the weekend, and there's Caitlin Collins from CNN reporting this as well. And then I think we were quoting y'all starting on Monday, I think. Was it Monday or Tuesday? We were quoting Landyap that Ann Davis at Ladd People Stadium was saying, I didn't know about that. And then we hear, okay, well, the city of Mobile says, well, we haven't heard from the White House. And then I guess the first time I saw it, Debbie Williams with WKRG was talking to Tubby Tuberville at an event down in South Baldwin. He said, well, it'd be great and everything, but we hadn't heard about it. So imagine my confusion. How about you?
It is confusing. I mean, I even wrote a column about it, Sean, and it's confusing. Whether it's going to happen or not, we don't know. It sounds like something that would happen, but it also could sound like just a head fake, you know? I don't know. It's one of those things that I thought that, President Trump is definitely going to mess with Jeff Sessions to some extent, one way or the other, as the election approaches, as the runoff approaches, but this would be, this would be a kind of a monumental political slap in the face to do it. So it's a big requirement to come and do it. So the fact that nobody knows about it yet does kind of suggest that there's something strange about this whole thing.
Well, I did wonder.
It was reported by CNN to begin with, so I'm going to give that a kind of a mediocre. Could it be true? I don't know.
Yeah, you write that in your column. Just because CNN reported it doesn't make you say, okay, this for sure is happening. But you know, and I asked this question yesterday too. You talk about the slap to the face. Is it more about is it more about Tommy Tuberville winning or Jeff Sessions losing for President Trump?
Well, I think that's obvious. I think it's all about just wanting to be part of Jeff Sessions losing. You know, I think if he feels comfortable that Tuberville will win, then he's going to want to kind of pile on and say, yeah, I helped this happen.
Point out that they're all in the same party. Let me just point that out to y'all. They're all Republicans.
They are all in the same party.
This is President Trump, the Republican, and we're talking about two candidates in a Republican runoff for Senate. Just want to point that out.
It gets into a lot of personal stuff, obviously, and a lot of the animosity and Trump's stated feelings that Sessions recusing himself led to the impeachment proceeding, which is it's a little bit of the logic's a little tough sometimes on that, but it's that's his feeling and he's stated it many times.
Rob, let's say that they were planning to hold this rally in Mobile. Do you think there would have been pushback from Ladd Peebles or from the health departments down here? I mean, just logistically making that happen and getting tens of thousands of people into Ladd Peebles Stadium. Do you think that I don't think that would have just skated through and everybody would have said, okay, let's have a big rally.
I got to think certainly from the health department they're going to say something about it. Ladd would say much about it. I'm sure they'd be excited to have the president visit again. But those are questions being asked all over the country, right? As these political rallies start back up, are they safe to have? And obviously, it's a question of how people are going to attend them is an entirely different. Now, I mean, I was there at the last one. I mean, I was there at the very first one. I can tell you there was enough room for everybody. There was enough room left in the stadium for everybody to move 6 feet apart.
Of course, we've been at both events preceding with the radio station, and I'm not going to say how many people were in the stands because that was I think that story still get quoted in stories about
officially
that.
Counted, right?
We're just getting the effect. We're getting the smoke without the fire. That this was floated just to.
I asked Senator Sessions about it too. Remember the first time he came down, it happened very quickly, and it was supposed to occur at one place. Then it moved to another. Then it moved to another. Then it moved to Ladd. All of a sudden, in a matter of just less than a day. So I don't know. Ladd certainly accommodated him. Now he was not the president at the time. He was a candidate. They accommodated him in less than 24 hours. I believe it was less than 24 hours that first go round. Obviously, with the president, there's a lot more. There's a lot more things that have to happen, and I'm sure that we would know. I would hope we would know a lot sooner than just the day before or something like that. But certainly, if it doesn't materialize pretty soon, you got to think this is just a lot of talk.
Well, waiting to see. I mean, there'd have to be some advance warning. And by the way, if anybody hadn't checked, we're looking at less than 3 weeks, July 14th. Yeah. I mean, we're this is
it's got to happen pretty soon. And it would be it would be almost it's kind of as strange that it would something like this would come out and not happen. Where would this come from? I would love to know what the source was for this.
By the way, side note here before we run to the news break, what do you think here? The History Museum as the home, although that's being disputed too, but let's just say it stays at the History Museum, the Admiral Sims statue. Do you think it's over and done with at that? Is that a good thing for the city?
I think it's the smartest thing at this point. It's a good place for it to be and for people to see it. If it creates a lot of issues for a lot of people in town, then I understand some people want it, some people don't, but at this point, if you're going to have to protect it and worry about it constantly, is it better just to put it somewhere where it can be looked at as a piece of history, which is what it is? I think that that makes the most sense to me.
All right, coming right back, more with Rob Holbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. We'll talk about the new issue out on the streets now and how to get signed up over on the website. And reminder, too, votenappies.com. You know, we have shows fighting against each other. We have a graphic of that, too, on our Facebook page, what it's like when we have to fight against ourselves in the nappies. Go check that out, facebook.com/FMTalk1065. Mobile Mornings, FM Talk 106.5 online at fmtalk1065.com. While we're slinging websites to lanyapmobile.com and votenappies.com, our buddy Rob Holbert from Lanyap with us right now. Tell folks about the nappies. What's the time frame? How long do we have to go with this?
We got a couple more weeks of nappy voting, man, and it is this has been the most voting we've ever had for the nappies at this point so far this year. It's just going berserk. Maybe it's just that people don't have things to do. I don't know, but everybody's torn into it like they never have before. It's just going wild.
Remind people the rules. It's a once a day thing.
Once a day, yeah, once a day, and so it's you get to vote on that email once a day, and so vote early and often, but you can only vote once a day. Just to make it a daily thing.
All right, and while we're talking about your websites, too, lanyapmobile.com, where people can sign up and get news right there on their on their phone, on their computer, on their tablet.
Yep. It's $1.50 a week. It's cheaper than a cup of coffee. You can go and you can read everything we're doing. Plus, we have breaking news all the time. We have breaking news every day. So, it's a good thing to keep up with. And, there's those archives. You can go back and look for things for years. You want to get in a political argument with somebody, go back and look something up. Yeah, it's right there.
There you go. And you can present them like, well, little known fact. Yeah. Break that out.
Yeah. The Trump card right there, yeah.
You could talk about what the first and second president, the first Trump visit, second President Trump visit were like to the city of Mobile.
Yeah, we're a long way away from the Christmas tree scandal.
Remember that? Do you remember the Christmas tree, y'all?
Yes. We our cartoon is this week. We kind of revisit the cartoon, the Christmas tree debacle.
there are people that maybe have moved to town since or don't remember, but it was back when the world was different. The hotly contested subject was cutting a tree from a city park to use at Ladd People Stadium for President Trump's Christmas visit. That was back in the old days when that was the issue. Trees.
Yes, it's one of the things that has led to the legend of the mayor's nickname was Sandy Stumpson.
See, get this a lot more.
He's a timber man from way back, so he's taken out a few trees in his life.
What do I talk about? A cover story here for y'all in an interview that I had earlier this week with former governor of the state, Don Siegelman, and his book here, and he's, at least in the interview discussion, he tried to tie it to what was going on today, that book, Stealing Our Democracy, How the Political Assassination of a Governor Threatens Our Nation. He was tying it to news stories of the day. Talk to me about this.
Well, we talked to him again and went through his book and did kind of a review on it. If you followed Don Siegelman, obviously the concept, he's a firm believer that he was a victim of a political conspiracy, that he was put in jail, that Karl Rove and Bill Pryor and a number of other people involved in putting him in jail. I've talked to him before. I've sat down and interviewed him a few years ago, you've interviewed him. I believe he believes that. I don't know that I believe it, but I think he believes it. And his book is it's an interesting book, though. He goes through and he talks about being in jail that's a lot of it. Talks about being in federal prison. He talks about some really inside baseball stuff about his trial, about his attorneys, about a variety of things. So if you like political thrillers, even though the end of it, it's interesting because you do get to hear a lot of the inside baseball stuff.
You wonder about this. So the last of the Democrat governors for, it's been, what, heck, that's been 90, it's been decades? Can we, is it plural decades now since we've had a Democrat governor in the state of Alabama? I was, you know, I was asking him if he thought we'd have one again. He thought yes, but, I mean, well, what do you think? I mean, in our lifetimes before they put me in the ground, do we have a...
You know, Sean, I think everything is cyclical, and, you know, I've always been my observations have always been that once one party is in control of something, in absolute control of it, they do everything they can to screw that up. And I think we see that pretty often, right? I mean, you know, the Democrats had a lock on our state government for a long time, and it was a total mess when the Republicans took over. And, you know, we're on the Republican side, they're doing the same thing at this point. I think you can look at it and say there's some real issues going on too. So, you know, anything can happen. People can get pretty sick of things.
Hey, speaking of governors in our state, maybe it's just standing out to me, your fresh take on it. It has seemed odd to me that Governor Ivey has been like nowhere the last couple of weeks, where, you know, most states, their governors are doing like a daily show, you know. Governor Ivey's, I hadn't heard from her. Maybe I just missed it.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's anything different than we've really seen from her for the most part. I mean, she's not a high energy governor. She's not a high energy person, I don't think. And, you know, I think there are enough people that have been around her that I've spoken to who just say she's handled, you know, she's handled with care.
So wait. She's handled with care. Governors do the handling. They handle people. They don't get handled.
Well, I don't know. I would tend to say that that's probably not the case here.
And you know, we haven't, I guess we saw her talking about the, what phase are we on now in the reopen? We're still in the second phase.
Safer at home, safer. Amended.
Yes,
so
right.
We did hear and see Ivy and Scott Harris talking about that weeks ago at this point. But since then, I don't know if she knows, a lot has happened in America with the George Floyd death and the protests around America. Do you think that she owes it to Alabama to come out and speak about these protests that have been happening not just around the nation, but Birmingham, Mobile, Montgomery? She's the governor.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for her to say something about it. You know, what is she going to say about it? I don't know. You know, I've sort of gotten used to these sort of platitudes and bromides from her that are sort of, you know, just kind of countryish and whatever, and we're going to all take care of it. And I don't have a lot of expectations from her, and I haven't for a while.
There we go.
It's just not, I mean, I think she's a figurehead.
She's being handled.
I think she's handled. I think she is being handled. And I think that is, you know, if she was really in charge of things, then why isn't she getting out and saying something?
All right. Let's do this. A cartoon in the future with Governor Ivey with handles drawn on. just an idea. All right, Rob, remind folks, pick up the physical copy of Lanyap. Where do they go?
You can check us out in several locations around town. Look for our boxes. We're really delivering a lot more papers to the boxes right now because, I mean, the concept of sticking your head into a bunch of different buildings with all this going on is probably not a great idea. So really look for the boxes. We're loading those up. That's where you'll see a lot of papers.
All right. Check them out there. And, of course, lanyapmobile.com.
Yes, of course, lanyapmobile.com. You can check us out there as well.
Rob, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Rob Holbert checking in from Lanyap. Hey, and before we wrap up today, and if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see the tease on this from Leanna. National Go Fishing Day today. Figured it's a good time to launch this contest, something I've been wanting to do for a while. We've got these pretty darn cool FM Talk 106.5 fishing shirts, the dry fit, long sleeve fishing shirts. And so on our Facebook page, you post up your fishing picture. Okay, you go to FM Talk 106.5 on Facebook, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. You post up your fishing picture, and then each week, the picture that gets the most likes wins.
Mm-hmm.
It's that easy.
And you win one of these FM Talk 106.5 fishing shirts for having the most likes on your fishing picture. So we'll get it officially launched before the midday show today and talk about it some. But yeah, it's going to be your chance to win. We'd love to see your pictures. We're incentivizing that with your chance to win.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, a picture taken this week.
Oh, it could be a classic picture. Yeah.
So with this preview, now that you know that we're going to have this contest, you can go back through the old Polaroids, some of the old, you know, pictures that you actually held in your hands and looked at. Go ahead and start scanning those, getting them ready to post them on our Facebook page. And those shirts are awesome.
Yep. Dalton's got one, likes his. I like mine. So you can win one as well. Just keep up to date on the Facebook page, and we'll talk more about that on the midday show today. All right. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next.